Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we are talking about the training intensity distribution of elite endurance athletes and some things that we can learn from that as CrossFit coaches and athletes. So modern elite endurance athletes spend 80% of their training time at low intensity and only 20% at medium or high intensity. It has not always been this way. This training intensity distribution has increased in popularity in recent decades, and the percent of training time spent at low intensity also has increased over the years. So there are a few terms that we need to understand and define before we are on the same page about training intensity. So the first one is LT1. This is lactate threshold 1. So this is the lowest exercise intensity at which there is a measurable increase in blood lactate compared to resting blood lactate concentrations. So it is not really a threshold in that nothing dramatic happens when you go over it. Blood lactate will still be in a steady state if you go slightly above lactate threshold 1. Lactate threshold 2 is actually a threshold, meaning this is typically what CrossFitters mean when they say their lactate threshold, because when you go above LT2, your blood lactate concentrations are no longer stable. There will be an accumulation of blood lactate that makes that exercise intensity physiologically unsustainable. Okay, so we have LT1 and LT2. LT1 tends to be around 2 millimoles of lactate per liter of blood. So, low intensity training, this is training zone 1, and this is where modern elite endurance athletes spend 80% of their training time, is below LT1. So below 2 millimoles of blood lactate per liter. It is long, slow distance. The lactate levels are stable. It is physiologically sustainable because the blood lactate levels are constant, and it is primarily aerobic energy production. So energy production is going to be predominantly aerobic. Moderate intensity, this is training zone 2. So this is between LT1 and LT2, essentially riding the line between physiologically sustainable and unsustainable. This is typically somewhere between 2 millimoles and 4 millimoles of blood lactate per liter. This is also called threshold training, and it can be either continuous or interval based. Finally, we have training zone 3. Training zone 3 is high intensity. This is above LT2. This is typically above 4 millimoles of blood lactate per liter. It is always interval based. Essentially, you have to stop, except for in rare cases like a time trial. But typically, when you're training in this training zone, you are doing interval based activity. It is physiologically unsustainable, hence the need to break. And there's a greater contribution of anaerobic energy production. So blood lactate concentrations are going to be higher, and they're not going to be stable, meaning there's going to be a steady accumulation of more and more lactate in your blood, and there's going to be a greater contribution of anaerobic energy production. And that contribution increases the greater the intensity of the exercise. Okay, so we have these three training zones defined. We have our lactate thresholds defined. Now, what are modern elite endurance athletes doing with all that information? So in the off season, there's almost no time spent in training zone 3. Pre-competition, it's a little bit more. Competition, it's a little bit more. But even during the competition period, elite endurance athletes are not spending more than 20% of their training time in training zone 3. Even during the competition period, they're spending 80% of their training time in training zone 1. 2 high-intensity training sessions per week seem to suffice to induce adaptations for performance. And by high intensity, remember, we're talking about basically interval sessions. To translate it into CrossFit language, whenever you're doing intervals or you're doing Metcons, you are in training zone 3. Okay, so with that all in mind, what does that mean for CrossFit? What does that mean for us inside of CrossFit? CrossFit is super maximal in intensity. Always, nearly every task you do is physiologically unsustainable. It's about 50-50 anaerobic and aerobic energy production. Even in very short CrossFit workouts like Isabel, there's still a significant contribution of aerobic processes to energy production. The percent of 1RM of the contractions you're doing inside of CrossFit is very, very high compared to endurance sport. Doesn't mean that the endurance sports aren't also intense. They definitely are. But this is important to note because this is why strength is so important. And you guys hear me say this all the time, but before you even think about how to best condition for CrossFit, it really doesn't matter until you are really, really strong. Once you are really, really strong relative to your competition, then you want to train extensively because the competition, the energy demands of a multi-day CrossFit competition are extensive. So you need to train extensively for it. So that's where this sort of 80-20 approach really comes into play. So for a conditioning biased athlete, meaning you're already strong enough relative to your field of competition to start focusing on conditioning, you want to spend lots of time in training zone one. And you want to do that with concentric based, meaning machines, and machines that most of the time target the quads. I'm going to get a little bit more into the four machines that I recommend CrossFitters use. And one of them is not common in many CrossFit gyms, so I'll get to that here in a little bit. Two high intensity, meaning training zone three above LT2, interval sessions per week suffice to induce adaptations for performance. These can be mixed, meaning Metcons, or cyclical, meaning intervals. Reduce the RPE with which you do your conditioning. So if you take nothing else away from this episode, I strongly recommend that just across the board, you reduce the RPE with which you do your conditioning. There's a bit of a veil around the training of elite CrossFitters. People observe elite CrossFitters training 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and they think they're doing all of that training at high intensity. Well, if it actually was high intensity for that athlete, it would not be sustainable for them to train for 4, 5, 6 hours per day. So it actually, while it may appear to be intense to the aspiring elite CrossFitter, it actually physiologically is not very intense for elite CrossFitters conducting that amount of training. So reduce the RPE with which you do your conditioning so that you can accumulate more training time. Use machines to replicate the patterns of movement and remove all eccentric loading. So eccentrics, meaning just a quick definition here, as the muscle is lengthening, tension through the lengthening of the muscle. Too much eccentrics will result in tissue damage, both to contractile tissues and non-contractile tissues, so connective tissues as well. And that's why we want to use machines, because machines are going to remove all of that eccentric contraction, and it's going to make all of the contractions concentric based. That's what machines do. So these four machines cover each movement pattern that you need for CrossFit. In order, they are rowing, biking, Stairmaster, and finally skiing. So I'm going to go through each of them. Rowing is number one because you get essentially the squat pattern, the bending pattern, and the pulling pattern when you are rowing. You get knee extension, you get shoulder extension, you get scapular retraction, you get some hip extension. So you're really hitting a lot of your bases if you are doing a lot of your training zone one work on the rower. Biking is next. This is mainly knee extension, and there's also a pushing and really minor pulling component if you're doing it on an air bike. Next is Stairmaster, and this is the one that I really like because it mimics the single leg or lunge pattern really well. And the reason that it's not in CrossFit gyms is probably just because of the expense and the amount of floor space that it takes up, and it's not very easy to wheel around. So that's why they're not super common in CrossFit gyms, but they are a really, really great tool, especially for they're widely used among outdoor athletes in the endurance community, and they are a great tool for CrossFitters as well. Skiing is the last one, and in skiing, you're getting essentially your core and some pushing, and you're getting shoulder extension, elbow extension, core, and hip flexion. So you are, if you use all four of those machines for your training zone one work, then you are covering all your bases in terms of the patterns that you need for CrossFit, which are squat, bend, push, pull, lunge, and core movements. Final thought. So the final thought on this, the CrossFit experiment is what if we just do high intensity every day? And everyone knows that feeling of doing your first open workout or your first CrossFit workout ever, being super unsustainable intra-workout, getting a ton of metabolic and cardiorespiratory stress, and just having that memorable feeling of getting hit by a truck. So we all remember that. And as we get on this sport, we kind of learn, okay, well, I can't do that very often, if at all, and I have to really dose that appropriately. So all that to say, we don't really know what happens if someone were to do that crazy high intensity day in, day out, week after week for multiple years. But we do know that people are churning out of CrossFit gyms and out of the sport at very high rates. And so I think that the 80-20 intensity distribution from endurance sports, there's of course more nuance to it than that, but speaking generally, 80-20 is quite a bit more easy training than most CrossFitters are used to doing. And I think that if just generally, if we reduce the RPE with which we're doing our conditioning, then we are much more likely to have more sustainable, longer careers and ultimately better long-term development outcomes and higher career achievements if we skew more towards that intensity distribution. So we're not exactly sure why high-intensity training is so stressful and much more likely to cause burnout than low-intensity training. But there must be something psychologically, physiologically going on. We can kind of measure physiologically the metabolic stress, like I said, and the cardiorespiratory stress is higher than training zone one. But we're not exactly sure the mechanisms that lead to that just kind of burning athletes out and them not wanting to do it anymore. So still lots more to learn and effectively implement from the endurance community. Okay, guys, that's it for today. I'm going to include the link to the review. It's from 2015. I encourage you guys to check that out if you're interested, especially if you're a coach. And if you're listening to this podcast on Spotify, please rate. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. And I will see you guys in the next one.